Early on in my time here, I had what I thought was a bright idea. Trying to get more people to come to our church auction, I thought that if we would provide the dinner here, then people might be more likely to come because they wouldn't have to spend Saturday afternoon fixing some food to bring. This was because I'd had the same thought the year before. Oh, I have to make something. The mistake I made was assuming other people were like me. So anyway, I convinced the rest of the church staff to help me, and we put on a meal for the crowd that year. It was pretty simple fare: pasta and sauce, bread and salad, some store-bought cookies. But afterwards, a few people said things like, "I kind of like our potlucks," and "I missed the diversity of all those dishes we usually have." I wasn't having anything of it until Kevin Backman, who many of us remember fondly. Kevin died as a young man a few years ago, and he is sorely missed in our hearts around here. Kevin, if you remember him, he was a little more blunt with me. "It wasn't very good, that dinner," Kevin said. "The pasta was sticky. The sauce was thin and not that exciting. The cookies weren't even homemade." And he was right. Kevin was a cook, and so he knew what he was talking about. So last weekend, I had this moment of epiphany at our auction, whenever that was. Was it last week? Yeah, just a week ago. I was standing at the food table, looking over all these possibilities, and I hadn't even gotten to looking at the dessert table yet. And I said out loud, "I love to eat this way. You know, why have only one entree when you can try four or five?" And I had the thought, if our church had a mascot, wouldn't it be a potluck supper? I don't know how you have somebody dress up as one of those, but I'm sure one of you could figure it out. But isn't a potluck meal a good metaphor for our church? Everybody brings something that they like to make. It's a little part of who you are. And this creates a much more interesting and much more enjoyable feast than some uniform, mass-produced meal by people who aren't very good cooks. As you heard from Abby a few minutes ago, today is Stewardship Sunday. Over the past few weeks, we've been hearing these wonderful testimonials from some of you about what the church means to you here. And if you missed any of those and you want to catch them, they're printed copies on the round table in the Murray Room, and they're also available on our website. So today is the day we ask you to make your financial commitment to the church for the coming year. And what I want you to hear most of all is that this is not one size fits all. We ask you to give as you are able. And I hope you will feel good about what you give, whatever that amount is. And if we all do our part, then we will be just fine. My mom tells me stories about the church that she grew up in, First Methodist Church in downtown Charlotte, North Carolina. Both of my grandparents, her parents' funerals were there, and I know that sanctuary, and so I can picture it when my mom talks about it. And she still remembers a pastor they had when she was a teenager. She says his name was Reverend Clovis Chapel. What a great name for a preacher. And he was a Southern man. And my mom says he would stand up in the pulpit on Stewardship Sunday, and this big smile would come over his face as he surveyed the congregation. And he would say, "I love this time of year coming around, this time for talking about money. I love to see the generous people smile and the stingy people shudder. Now, I hope nobody is shuddering here, but I know that some of us get uncomfortable talking about money. For some of us, it even brings up feelings of embarrassment or shame. But is there anyone here who thinks of themselves as stingy? No. Is there anyone among us who aspires to that? No. If money makes you uncomfortable, then I encourage you to pay attention to that. It means you have some work to do, but it's work that you are capable of doing. And it's important work so you can be free. Money is simply an element of exchange. Yes, of course, having some of it does make life easier. But isn't it clear that money is no indicator of whether a person has integrity or decency? Money has nothing to do with your worth and should have nothing to say about your dignity, especially here. So hold your head up and feel good about what you give. And if you know in your heart that you could give a little more, that's not a hard problem to solve. You can see me if you need my help with that. But listen to these words from Theodore Roszak that describe what we try to do here in this faith community. He says, "I trust that you are a person in your own right, possessed of a beauty and a value that are the earth's richest treasures. So I make this promise to you. I will impose no identities upon you, but will invite you to become yourself without shame or fear. I will hold open a space for you in the world and defend your right to fill it with an authentic vocation. For as long as your search takes, you have my loyalty." That's why we're here, to create and hold open a space where each of us can become who we were meant to be. And then to help others do this too. And together, that's how we help heal and bless our world. It's not that complicated. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's something we each can and should do and are called to do. And we're all in this together. Like we just sang, those lines that always get me, "Drifting here with my ship's companions, all we kindred pilgrim souls, making our way by the lights of the heavens in our beautiful blue boat home." Our worship theme for this month of April is creation, which causes me to think of our blue-green planet spinning on its axis, making its way around the sun through the universe. Christine Robinson's version of Psalm 93 that we heard a few minutes ago puts it this way: "You have put on beautiful clothes, Holy One, this amazing universe. You have made the nothingness solid with an intricate web of laws and brought life into being by your love to evolve its own forms and find its own heart. From everlasting to everlasting, you are. Louder than the pounding waves, larger than the sea is your voice, whispering still and small in our hearts." If you ever despair for your life or for our world, go outside and look up at the sky. Feel the earth under your feet. Kneel down and touch the earth. I know you might need to push away some snow right now, but not for much longer. Dig your fingers into the dirt Be still and listen for the sound of the wind blowing or a bird singing, the quiet voice of God. Doesn't being part of this wondrous creation that we inhabit invite us and prod us to our own acts of creativity? You may be somebody who says, oh, I'm not creative. But if you cook, you are creating something good and useful. And if you gather people around a table to share with them what you have prepared, then you are creating something sacred and important. If you garden, you're a creator. If you're raising children, you are definitely a creator. I wonder about you parents, particularly with little ones. Do you ever take the time to step back and look with awe and wonder at what you are creating? Some of you are artists, painters, collage makers, writers, poets. And it's wonderful that you have these skills and these passions. The only trouble with that I see is that those of us who can see ourselves as less skilled in these endeavors, we can stop thinking of ourselves as artists at all. And we're all meant to engage in acts of creation. That's why there's this resurgence of coloring books for adults, right? You've seen these. Because it feels good to do that, and it's good for you. The artist Howard Ikimoto says, when my daughter was about 7, she asked me one day what I did at work. I told her that I worked at the college. My job was to teach people how to draw. And she looked back at me incredulous, and she said, you mean they forget? So this month, as we reflect on creation, we're going to do an act of mindful coloring, just on a larger scale. Julia Bethman has created this beautiful mandala for us. And she's bringing paint and brushes. And over the next few weeks, we're going to color in the parts. We're going to set up a table right here. And we're going to do it in worship. And when it's finished, we're going to hang it in the Murray Room as a beautiful symbol of our community and the varied contributions that we make. The mandala is an ancient symbol that originated in Hinduism and Buddhism. It's an example of what's called sacred geometry, which you also see in those beautiful round rose windows in cathedrals. I see it also in the lines of our ceiling here. Sacred geometry and these symbols remind us that we are part of these patterns that exist in nature. These patterns which remind us that creation is holy and good. Carl Jung said the mandala signifies the wholeness of the self. The circular image represents the wholeness of the psychic ground, he said, the divinity incarnate in humans. So starting next Sunday, right here during the worship service, we will invite you to come forward and add paint to this mandala that Julia has drawn for us. We'll invite you to do this in silence while the service goes on, and we hope that you will approach this with a sense of reverence. And that through this shared act of creation, you will feel a deeper connection to the holy and to this community of souls. And if you're somebody who right now is thinking, paint in the sanctuary? Don't worry, there'll be a drop cloth under the table and some water and rags to clean up any spills if necessary. We'll do this all month. Every Sunday, and it'll be lovely to see it gradually take shape. And isn't this mandala, this shared art project, also a good symbol for our church. Within the shape of this congregation, there are so many different spaces where you are invited to find your place, to make your contribution. And together, we create something beautiful. We do this with our presence and with our efforts, with our money, and with our love. My new favorite hymn says it this way. Here in reverence now we gather for the blessings we have known, with a pledge to one another that we journey not alone. Joy and sorrow make us wise, kin to all that lives and dies. Love calls us on, and hope calls us on, and faith calls us on, life calls us on, and isn't it good? Isn't it good? Amen. So let's sing.